show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
And, well, howdy. What that was, how that started. Maybe I stepped on the third switch instead of throwing it. At any rate, welcome to the middle of the week. Welcome to the final program for this week. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm out the door as of tomorrow morning. Heading up to Wisconsin, and looking forward to it very much. Going to take some science up that way, and hopefully provide a little bit more along many good reasons for not blasting the bejesus out of the Pinocchio Hills or poisoning people with frac sand mining. Blasting. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you will find, among other things, the Listen Live button. You will also find the access to the chat room. It's free and it's easy. You should wander by sometime. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. You will also find the PayPal button and the traditional mail address for helping to keep this whole effort on the air and running and going. And big thanks going out to Margaret and to Philip, who actually took down half of what, well, let's put it this way. For last night and tonight, fundraising, thanks to Margaret and Philip, we need to raise only, here we go with the math on the fly again. $220. And that's for last night and tonight. Then there's Thursday and Friday, which are going to be reruns, but fundraising is all based on just 5 days of broadcasting a week. So $220, and Kate, right before airtime, got us started. So that means we're now down to $195 to be raised for the just to keep things going, to take care of yesterday and today. And then I guess we'll worry about Thursday and Friday later, although if we could get those $300 out of the way, it would be a real bonus. No, it wouldn't be a bonus. It would be keeping even. Bonuses are things on top. Right. So no program tomorrow, no program Friday, no program Monday. I double-checked my agenda for Monday flying home, and that gets me, I land in Charleston at 9:38 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So no program Monday night. But back at it on Tuesday for certain. Thanks, Randy. Loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. Appreciate it. And in case you were wondering, if you didn't get the memo, Dr. Bill went an hour early this afternoon. He will do this. Then next Monday and Tuesday, regular time, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern, and then on Wednesday, 3 to 5 again. So that's the housekeeping. And it is out of the way, I guess we could say. Oh, and by the way, it is a toasty 66 degrees in the studio. So it's not quite as bitter as it was last night. About 5 past the hour, and well, I think it's fair to say, well, I don't know how to. I was all fired up to get the program going this evening, and I'm going to do my best. But about an hour ago, I started feeling just really yucky.
Yuck.
So I may bail out at some point in time, just saying. Not because I don't want to do this, but because I feel, and the word operative word here is yucky. I'll do my best. I think we're going to be hearing from my colleague and buddy with the ACACT, Bo Webb, here in a little bit. We've been talking a little bit about trying to just sort of process a little and talk a little bit about the problems that exist that are created by big so-called greens, or so-called big greens, or as Agnes likes to refer to them now, big Soylent greens. And just what it is why difficult work is made even more so by people who yet profess to be allies. So I hope that'll be happening. I suggested to Bo that he call in here about 3 or 4 minutes from now. We'll find out. Apart from that, of course, it is also Friday. No, it's prayer meeting Wednesday. And if things were different, I guess we would have a prayer meeting Wednesday on the thorn in the front porch and just roll it all into one. But no, I, under the circumstances, I that might be pushing it. So, Where to begin? Oh, I know where to begin. Wait, what? Oh, ick. Note coming in from Dr. John. Bob, bad news. This has never happened before, but upon launching the TuneIn app, I heard a commercial before your stream picked up, and it was bad. From ExxonMobil. Fueling the future! Future, future, future. Maybe a call to the TuneIn folks, or perhaps a series of calls from the Horn Family Commune? Yeah. If you're getting that, I mean, I like the fact that we're on TuneIn. I like being on Stitcher. And I understand that they're going to advertise. Understand, whatever they're charging for that advertisement, we are not getting a penny of it. Not that I would take a penny from ExxonMobil, but just say it. So, yeah, if you want to reach out to TuneIn and tell them, if I'm going to get ExxonMobil ads, I'll take my listening elsewhere. You're not the only stream on the planet. That's bad creepy. Thank you for letting me know, Dr. John. Now, I was out and running errands earlier, and I heard some coverage of that which is now taking place in the Philippines, and it's a nightmare. And I probably shouldn't even say something like that, because it's almost impossible to conceptualize the level of damage, the level of death and destruction and agony that has descended upon that island nation. A story from Agence France-Presse. As anarchy spread across a Philippine city demolished by one of the world's strongest typhoons, a 13-year-old boy holding a toy car and walking alone at night was slashed across the neck and stabbed in the stomach. Jesus. Jonathan Saleko said he was on the debris-strewn streets of disaster-hit Tacloban when two men he did not know pounced late on Tuesday, attacking him with a knife before disappearing without a trace. Good God. He was still holding his toy car, said Mina Josette, a Red Cross nurse at Tacloban Hospital, where Salako was brought on Wednesday morning. Looters have run wild in the wake of the storm. People are living in fear. And as I forget who it was I noticed making this remark earlier, and yet there are 15 working days for our hard-working Congress, and I doubt if 10 seconds of those 15 days remaining in this year will be dedicated to anything in the way of trying to provide relief to the people who have been hammered by that storm. Has anybody checked? Has Franklin Graham and Samaritan's Hustle gotten out there into the money stream yet? How about former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson? Is he ginning up the bucks yet for so-called relief? The energy minister of the Philippines said earlier today that it may take a year, to restore electricity to the areas that have been slammed by Typhoon Hainan. Food is in short supply, clean drinking water in even shorter supply. 2,000 police, soldiers, and special forces are patrolling the island of Leyte. And checkpoints have been set up. A curfew has been put in place. A mass burial, and the death toll just keeps rising. A mass burial was delayed, stopped, because of an eruption of gunfire. Shop owners have left their businesses out of fear that they would be targeted by looters. Good God. And that brings me to this, a note from Texas Betsy. Dear Bob, among my new immigrant students this year are two cousins from the Philippines, girls who are 11 and 12. They've been absent since Thursday, and one of the girls told my colleague that they'd had a death in the family. With the typhoon tragedy unfolding over there, I've been thinking about them and their families all weekend, and when they weren't in class this morning, and this was yesterday, I started calling all the phone numbers we have on file. It turns out that their grandmother here in Texas died last week, and the funeral was yesterday, Tuesday. I asked the aunt who answered the phone about their family back home, including the younger girl's mother, after I offered condolences on behalf of the school. The aunt told me that the immediate family is all alive, some extended family has yet to be located, but they're all homeless, all of them. The girl's elementary school is in ruins, sad but not as horrible as I had worried. Half an hour later, we had advisory, and my class watches Channel 1 News on Tuesdays. First story up was about the typhoon. Facts, pictures, eyewitness accounts. Then an NFL bullying story, that would be the Richie Incognito story. And then another typhoon story. This one featured a white American mom whose son is a Mormon missionary who is still unaccounted for. They showed her tears and anguish while reducing the Filipinos to statistics and moving pictures. The girls I see every morning are not the only Filipinos living here who speak English and are worried about their relatives, their homes, their friends, and everyone they know. They're not even the only ones in the school. What is it about U.S. news that has to focus on tragedies abroad only as they affect Americans? Not only tragedies, all news stories. I ended up turning it off and talking to the kids about what people who live there or come from there might be feeling. Thanks for letting me vent, signed Betsy. I don't think that's venting. I think that is a cogent recognition of one of the inherent failures of the for-profit media. I mean, it's classist, it's racist, it's xenophobic. Yeah. And it's also a darn good opportunity to gin up some cash for the outfits that spend most of their money on administration expenses. Folks like Samaritan's Purse and whatever hustle it is that Marion, former liquor officer Marion Robertson, is running. And thanks to Randy. He says, Thanksgiving contribution early. Thank you very much, Randy. That takes us down to $145 remaining to raise this evening. That's very helpful. Thank you very kindly. Jeremy noted, no advertisement here tonight when I tuned into the horn on my tune-in player, so that's a blessing. Ron and Raleigh, 66 degrees in the studio, Bob? That's downright balmy. The thermostat on the wall here at Chateau Ron reads a sultry 58. I might have to remove a layer. Yeah, I got my Polar Tech fleece pullover anorak thingy on, and it's feeling a little close right now. Be down to Bermuda shorts in no time flat. Jeremy also pointed out under the subject line, help, I can't count the number of right-wing asshats that I've already posed the question, should we really help these people or worry about number one, us? Bastards. They are that. Lord. But I also know, I recognize what day it is, middle of the week, downhill to Friday. It's also prayer meeting Wednesday, but insofar as I'm not feeling real great, I'm gonna save myself the disgust with myself that happens every time I channel that character that Kate loathes and simply refers to as the preacher. I'll save that, but no, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and there's a bunch out there. I've got some words for you from a spokesperson for the living God and creator of the universe. These words come from 2012. And it's regarding... And it's something written in 2012 regarding President Obama's stated support for marriage equality on the presidential endorsement of same-sex marriage. For two decades, the frog has been in the pot while the temperature has been slowly turned up. It began with the Bush's toleration for homosexuality, was advanced in full by Clinton, and has reached its logical zenith under Obama. So we should not be surprised by the official announcement that the President of the United States of America has finally declared to the world his opposition to the historical common law and biblical meaning of marriage. No, he didn't. See how they lie? He didn't say he opposed it. He merely wants to acknowledge that everybody should have the right to marry those whom they love, because there's no ban. Banning it cannot be supported under the Constitution of the United States. But anyway, President Obama may be remembered for many things. Dog whistle, hint. But few are as fundamental in its treason to his countrymen, to his oath of office, and to the living God, than his decision, and that's then his decision, T-H-E-N. We're talking about some highly literate folks here. Then his decision to use the presidency to redefine a definition of marriage that was established on day six of creation. Healing? Day six? Creation? Oh, that's when God administers the Mickey Finn to Adam and creates a woman out of his rib bone. Why God couldn't just do the same trick he did with Adam and make her out of the dust of the earth, just like she did. No real explanation for that. The definition of marriage that was established on day six of creation and has been the benchmark of civilization for 7,000 years. Mark your calendars! May 9th, 2012, the President of the United States of America finally crossed a line from which there is no return without repudiation and repentance. Terrorists are dangerous. What? The economy is a real and present danger. But there is simply nothing other than the Holocaust of the unborn. No, not the Holocaust of the Jews in the Second World War. No. The Holocaust of the unborn, which, again, is imaginary. These guys are rich. Which imperils the safety of our country or places our people in jeopardy, as does the leader of the Western world publicly raising his fist at the heavens and declaring that the bedrock institution of society, ordained of God and meant to be protected by the state, is little more than a convention of convenience for the children of Sodom to transform the meaning of something which is precious to Jesus Christ and a living picture of his love for the church into a legally protected justification for perversion and vehicle of hatred aimed directly at that love. Okay. Those are the words of a creep named Doug Phillips. He was the head of an outfit called Vision Forum and Vision Forum Ministries. He's also the son of the late right-wing, phony baloney, fake religion industry activist Howard Phillips. He's big in, Doug Phillips says he's big in Christian Reconstructionism. You know, the folks that want to stone everybody they don't like to death because there's plenty of rocks. And he's big in, remember when somebody wrote in a few weeks ago and said, Bob, what the hell is this quiver babies you're talking about? Well, he's a big deal in the anti-birth control movement, Quiverful, in which women's uteri are to be seen as nothing more than quivers to be filled with sacred Christian sperm arrows. Not making this up. Among other things, this Doug Phillips dude has declared that Sarah Palin is too liberal because she's pro-homosexual, and said that women who run for political office offend God. You know, with all of this background, there's got to be something really good coming. There is. Here is the statement from last week of Doug Phillips. There has been serious sin in my life for which God has graciously brought me to repentance. Don't you love the language? I have confessed my sin to my wife and family, my local church, and the Board of Vision Forum Ministries. I engaged in a lengthy, inappropriate relationship with a woe man. While we did not know each other in a biblical sense, it was nevertheless inappropriately romantic and affectionate. You know, because of romance and affection. No, it was not inappropriately romantic and affectionate. It was adulterous. And, by the way, you Christian Reconstructionist, you're supposed to now be taken outside the city gates and stoned to death. Natch. It won't be happening because, well, all pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs, Snowball. You can't make this stuff up. You just can't. But the obsessions And I don't understand it. Anybody that wants to jump out there and help is welcome to. I do not for the life of me understand. Why? Why are these alleged Christians so fascinated with how other... is it just that they don't know how to have sex very well? And you know, what's it like? Is that it? Do they have filthy, dirty little minds that just constantly need stimulation? Is it a latency thing? Here, let's check out Stanford University graduate Brian Fisher. Whoa, and I thought I was nauseated before. Y'all got to do something about that, Stanford.
Well, and I think Chris Christie, I'm willing to be educated on this, but I believe Chris Christie has been pretty good on the sanctity of life. I think he's actually been pretty good on that issue.
Right.
He's now capitulated on same-sex marriage. He's capitulated on the homosexual agenda. And I'm concerned about his judicial appointment.
The homosexual agenda, compelling people to put in wall sconces all across the country. The homosexual agenda. What?
Appointments. He has appointed active homosexuals to the bench. He's a
active homosexuals, not the couch potato homosexuals, the active ones. They do aerobics to, you know, YMCA, right?
Appointed Muslims to the bench.
Muslims? Were they Muslim homosexuals? Dear God.
And he seems to have a real blind spot when it comes to the danger and the threat of Islam to America's national security.
So this is the smear job that's out there. Thanks to our friends at Right Wing Watch, by the way. This is the smear job that's out there for, you know, sort of waiting for Chris Christie when he decides to get all froggy and be thinking he can be president of the United States. Forget it, Chris. Enjoy New Jersey because it's where you're staying. And really, really, Chris, You don't want to be seen out in Iowa trying to stick a corn dog all the way down your throat. The optics aren't good. Just please, trust me. Oh, it goes on and on and on. I mean, some real... restaurant quality crazy. I mean, for instance, we've got our old buddies again, David Barton, alleged historian, not, and Rafael Cruz. You tell Rafael. All right. Still haven't gotten it. Just a second here. Note from Dr. John. Hate to say it, but contrary to what Doug Phillips, romantic affection giver, thinks, marriage ain't about love. It's about sex and money. Looking cross-culturally, Dr. John says marriage exists for very specific reasons. To protect property rights and inheritance. To grant each spouse access to the wealth and labor of the other, to socially recognize the right of sexual access to the spouse. Not very romantic, perhaps, but that's anthropology. Fact is, the opposition to same-sex marriage is really about trying to keep certain people in poverty and to police how people mate. It's all very true. Ron and Raleigh says, Bob, I'm going to have to mute you if you play any Chappie Klingenschmidt. Don't worry, Ron. Chappie threw a hissy at YouTube and managed to go and get Right Wing Watch's YouTube account canceled, suspended. Because Chappie can't stand the criticism. His God is so weak that he cannot provide him the... strength to bear up under people who simply point out the words that he says. No, I didn't know that. Irish Dave. Bob, did you hear that among the more sciencey types, quiverful types are called fast breeders? No, I did not. The marriage business, though. I ran across this in the strangest way. I was trying to figure out, because, you know, 19th and 18th century people like to name their children after biblical figures, and you know, you can only, there's only so many Moses, Isaiahs, and Isaacs, and Pauls, and Stephens, and apparently my great-great-grandmother had a real hankering for creative Bible names. And one of my multi-great-uncles, she named Loammy. So I went wandering around the other day to find Loammy, find out where it came from, and I found it. It turned out, it made me happy that I found it, because I was given, it comforted me when I found out what it means. It comes from the book of Hosea. The word of the Lord that came, and see, as it turns out, it's not just, hey, where does Loammy come from? It's also a story of that loving relationship called marriage that Doug Doofus Phillips was palavering on about. Here's some of that loving marriage. The word of the Lord that came unto Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. The beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea. And the Lord said to Hosea, go, here's that loving marriage, go take unto thee a wife of whoredoms, and children of whoredoms, for the land hath committed great whoredom departing from the Lord. So he went and took, not making this up, Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived and bare him a son. Gomer did. Golly! Surprise, surprise, surprise. And the Lord said unto him, call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. And she conceived again, and it shall come to pass at that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. And she conceived again, and bare a daughter. And God said unto him, call her name Loruhamah, Hamana, 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 for I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. So here you have a guy who says God told me to go marry a hooker, and then God tells him what to name the children, and the children are to be given names that they will carry throughout their lives to represent how mad God is at the kingdom of Israel. So the children have to be punished with stupid names. Sheesh. Call her name Loruhamah, for I will no more have mercy. Yada, yada, we got that part. But I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by the Lord of their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, nor by horses, nor by horsemen. That limits things. Now when she had weaned Loruhamah, she conceived and bare a son. This is where it gets interesting. Then said God, call his name Loammy, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your God. So in my family tree is a statement made by virtue of the name of a child. You are not my people, and I will not be your God. I did a little further research on this, and it suggested that the little boy was named Loammy because it was actually Hosea saying, kid ain't mine. Gomer's done gone a-romping again astride the road. Yada, 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 yada. So there's that loving relationship. Go marry a hooker, make her have your children, and give her children really effed up names. Man, that is some beautiful love from the time of creation 6,000 years ago, isn't it? But you just can't beat it. Meanwhile, we have our see, Randy gets it. There's something there in the Bible about a man shall not lie down with another man, but it doesn't say anything about a woman laying down with another woman, does it? Oh, they get around to it sooner or later, Randy, but no. Different standards. Robert in Australia. The commercial news in Australia is just as bad, Bob, talking about the Philippines story. The Monty Python team once did a sketch called News for Parrots. Each news story ended with no parrots were hurt or no parrots were involved. Here in Australia, many stories only make the news if a single Australian was involved. The commercial news media do their best. Australian gets a splinter in little finger during storm that kills 10,000 locals. Really? The commercial news in Australia is just as bad as in the U.S., it seems, and I'm sure worldwide. Fortunately, we have two government-paid-for news services, the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and SBS, Special Broadcasting Services. ABC does a good job on mixing local and world news. SBS does a world news, which does, as it describes, reports the news from all over the world and not just in if an Australian is involved. To date, no news on whether Australia will be sending aid to the Philippines, which I personally find disappointing. It should have been on its way yesterday. You'd like to think that it's a matter of a foregone conclusion, that nobody in the... No, you can't make those assumptions anymore. Dr. John observing, meanwhile, it's 28 degrees in western Pennsylvania. That and a super typhoon. Global climate change is clearly a lie, right? Absolutely. It's the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on mankind. Jeremy on our buddy Doug Phillips. Oh, I'm willing to bet this turd Doug does some filling up himself and probably others too. He must really love Obama after the speech fist pump that Obama did yesterday with the news of his home state passing a marriage law of their own. Yeah, maybe he can... Guess he's not feeling so affectionate now. I'm glad I'm not the only one with strange names in my background. Irish Dave pointing out, my mother's father was a lifelong socialist in spite of being named Abijah. No, wait. Maybe because of it. See how it works? Irish Dave. God just wasn't into them folks then. Who put the low in low Amy, too, also? he also noted, I think I'll wait for the movie version rather than reading the Book of Gomer. Hooty hoot! Hooty hoot! Texas Betsy, who is our expert on these matters, says, you know that everything in the Book of Hosea is about the territorial fight between the house of Judah and the house of Israel, which will be supreme, which the center of Judaism. Lo Ami means not my people, literally. My fifth graders could translate it. I had to go look it up. But, you know, for me, who doesn't think much of the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, me not being his people and him not being my God seems that's a pretty good arrangement as far as I'm concerned. Of course, the whole Book of Hosea was actually written after the fact as a sort of ex post facto justification of what had gone on, because it was after the kingdom of Israel had been carried, had wiped out, whipped by the Assyrians. Oh, by the way, did I tell you all that back then, before all this happened, God was talking to me? No, I didn't. Yeah, it told me to marry a hooker. So we got that. And like I said, we've also got historian David Barton, who, if he declared that it was raining outside, would compel me to walk out. If he said the sky was blue and clear outside, I'd take an umbrella with me. Because the truth ain't in him. But, you know, on Monday, when we were observing Armistice Day and Veterans Day, on Monday, we took note of the fact that one of the best things this country can do to quote-unquote, support the troops is to be supportive and demanding of a super-efficient, highly humane Veterans Administration and a VA hospital system. We can shut them down now. Because what was known in the Great War as shell shock and became known in along about, World War II in Korea as battle fatigue and is now recognized as post-traumatic stress disorder, David Barton's done cured it. If you are a veteran, if you have ever accessed the veterans' healthcare system, if, God forbid, you have ever had to deal with post-traumatic stress disorder, this might be, and I apologize, but this might be a little triggery. And it's not offered as such. But it might have triggerish elements to it. So I just want to make that clear. Because I don't have PTSD, I have never been in the military, and I wanted to go and kick furniture. Well, I kind of did. I do that a lot these days. Let's get this over with.
Moses said unto them, if you will do this thing, so this is a promise, if you will do this thing.
That's Kenneth Copeland. And we're really not in, we're not clued into what the thing is. It's kind of like, you know, okay, so the guy will bring the thing. We're talking about the plates, but we'll just call it the thing. And you'll give him the thing. You give a guy calling himself D. Tracy wearing galoshes will come to your door. You give him the thing. So Moses says, if you'll do that thing, if you do that hoodoo that you do so well.
If you will do this thing, if you will go armed before the Lord to war, and will go all of you armed over Jordan before the Lord, until he hath driven out his enemies before him, and the land shall be subdued before the Lord, then afterward, Article number one, you shall return.
You're coming back.
And be guiltless before the Lord and before the nation.
Yep.
Now,
anybody with two functioning brain cells to rub together knows that that is an attempt to use religion to justify what might well be considered or would be considered in the modern context war crimes. You shall be guiltless before the Lord and before the nation. So give them hell, buddy. No, that's not how it works, according to Kenneth Copeland, whose daughter nearly set off a mini epidemic of whooping cough. No, that's not what it means, according to David Barton, either. Everybody, chair, duct tape, tennis balls. I'm not kidding.
Now, any of you suffering PTSD right now,
That's right.
You get rid of that right now. You don't take drugs to get rid of it.
See, I'm about ready to start making little forest animal noises. This guy, who has probably never heard a shot fired in anger, has never been anywhere near a front line, has never served in the military, because, well, Jesus, just told people with PTSD to get rid of it, and don't take no drugs, just get rid of it, like you take the trash out on Sunday night for Monday pickup.
It doesn't take psychology. That's right. That promise right there will get rid of it.
What we're talking about, that getting rid of that PTSD, guys who have been through battle, they need to understand that soldier's promise. You come back guiltless before God and the nation.
Yes, sir.
You come back guiltless. You're also, even though you've been through battle, look how many people in Hebrews 11, our Faith Hall of Fame, were warriors.
Really? There's a Faith Hall of Fame, too? This is so deeply insulting that I can scarcely express it. So if you go to war, you come back guiltless before God and the nation. Granted, that was the ancient children of Israel, but according to these guys, who else does it apply to? Clearly, they're saying it applies to the American military. How's about, oh, I don't know, did it apply to the Crusaders? Yup. Who burnt, raped, slaughtered, pillaged every human being in Jerusalem when they captured that city? Muslim, Jew, didn't matter, dead. Guiltless before the Lord, baby.
Who took so many people out in battle.
Almost that whole
thing. The whole thing. They are warriors. They are battle guys. And God says,
man, did you hear that? Almost the whole list, man. Dude, pass the bong. Surprised you can't see the clouds. The Colombian sauna smoke. Sauna, sorry. Hi, Janet.
These are the guys. This is the Faith Hall of Fame, right? I mean, not only are you guiltless, you're esteemed and venerated, and you need to get that vision of yourself. You need to say, hey, wait a minute.
Self-condemnation is the root that
That's
Satan
it.
Uses to drive people up the wall with us.
That's
stuff.
It.
And Romans 8 says there is therefore
now,
no condemnation.
That's right. You're on an elevated platform up here. You're a hero. You're put in the Faith Hall of Fame. If you take this thing and move the way, how many people did David slay? But that's the difference. And we used to in the pulpit understand the difference between a just war and an unjust war. And there's a biblical difference. And when you do it God's way, not only are you guiltless for having done that, you're esteemed.
Yeah. Thanks to our friends at Right Wing Watch. So just to be clear. If God tells you to go and rape and pillage and murder and plunder and commit genocide, you do it, and it's okay. And any nightmares that you may have over what you've done, that's, you know, Satan. Kevin with a note. PTSD at David Barton. Having dealt with PTSD, I can tell you that David Barton and Kenneth Copeland create PTSD triggers all by themselves. P.S. These things by two people who have never seen combat and would probably faint if they encountered or were presented with any situation that caused them to have to engage in such. Give me the road! I ain't showing nothing but the backs of my heels and my elbows. I'm a running. But, you know, PTSD, it's just one of those things of people being too hard on themselves because God. So. Am I to understand that God wanted us to start a war based on lies? Because the people who are suffering from PTSD right now, they go back to mostly because just simple the dynamics of populations dying off. We're mostly talking about Korea, Vietnam, and Bush Wars veterans. Primarily Vietnam and veterans of Bush Wars, Bush War I and Bush War II. Are we to understand that their God wanted a war started based on lies? Are we to understand that their God wanted a million innocent Iraqis to be killed for a lie? Because if that, well, that doesn't sound like the almighty loving creator of the universe now, does it? That sounds rather like, who? Satan? The very one. Yeah. From our Cassie at college. PTSD. Dear Bob, what the... I don't think I've ever seen Cassie type WTF before, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. These people do not know what they're talking about. PTSD is not about guilt. It's about having normal, regular, non-threatening anything from today trigger the feelings and panic from past trauma. I have PTSD without ever having gone to war. Yeah, but see, Cassie, they don't care about your PTSD. They're saying that soldiers who have PTSD have PTSD because they're not sufficiently loving of their God. And simply put, from Rob, guiltless before the Lord, that's what, see, that noise, that's what the tennis ball's for, Rob. Yeah, PTSD, preacher too stupid disorder. I agree, Lottie, in the chat room. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Juanita.
Oh, I got on.
You are.
I'm sorry, I hadn't been on very long. Okay. I missed a lot of your conversation, but I'm well acquainted with that guy. I don't know about the one, but Kenneth Copeland, yeah.
Yeah, you can kind of spot Kenny from a long way out, can't you?
Yeah. But I've got an announcement I want to make before I say anything about that.
Please do.
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you just great.
Well, good. My phone kind of sounds funny to me. Guess who came out yesterday for Rick Scott? You heard?
No.
Da-da-da!
Jebby?
Jeb Bush.
Of course he did.
He's really, we need him 4 more years because he's done all these wonderful things for Florida.
But aren't Rick Scott's numbers like in the toilet, Juanita?
Oh yeah, and I hope they stay there.
I mean, he's down to that place where the only people supporting him are like his cat.
About I don't know if his cat even supports him. It's about like the Congress, you know, they're 9% now. Today, as of today, I just heard.
Wow,
that's pretty bad.
Yeah, it is.
But did you see? Bono was he was on Saturday Night Live again last Saturday.
No,
him and Miley.
Well, I knew Miley was. I didn't know that. No.
Yeah, he was on there with him. I mean, he, yeah. He was on there one time before, and he did his act again this past Saturday.
It was really John Boner.
Well, it sure looked like him. He knew exactly how to act like Boner.
Mercy sakes!
It was a great actor. It was a great act. I mean, they fixed him. But I'm giving him credit for being on there. I'm being facetious about it. You forgot I'd be facetious sometimes.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yes, I was taking you for gospel there.
Yeah, but anyway. And what about little Carrie Underwood?
Oh, you mean this foolishness at the at the Country Music Awards?
Yeah.
I had the clip. I didn't play the clip. Because I didn't want to just start swearing. But
I didn't either. I saw part of it today.
So who was the hat that was sitting next to her?
They were on stage. I don't know. I heard it was a skit, but she was saying something about signing up to Obamacare since last Thursday.
Oh, 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 ain't that funny, huh?
But, you know, to me, Bob, somebody like her, people think she's a sweet little thing, you know?
Yeah.
And, anyway, to me, somebody like that can do more harm than Rush Limbaugh.
Well, right, because she's got more credibility than Flush Limbaugh.
Oh, yeah. Some of the Republicans don't even like him. But she's this sweet little thing.
Who makes fun of people trying to get health insurance?
Yeah.
I guess she does. I guess she what does she think that it's the Chablis and Bree set that are buying all those recordings that she makes?
Well, I mean, she's a millionaire now. You know, I mean, besides, so she's in a different world than the other people, I guess. I mean, I don't care, but I thought, oh boy, I do care, I guess. But
well, I saw this story, and the first thing I thought that came to my mind was, how about that? This woman's going to mock people's access to health care.
Yeah.
And but the country had a hissy over Miley Cyrus sticking her tongue out and shaking her backside.
Now, if you haven't seen that SNL thing, if you didn't appreciate Miley at all.
Oh, that was Brad Paisley. Brad Paisley was the hat.
And you're a liberal at all, you will appreciate that they had together. It was her and him together. And you know what is strange to me now about her daddy? I remember years ago, his daddy was a Democratic congressman, and they were supporting Clinton. And then I believe they got into the right wing situation, and I think Miley's kind of pulling them out of it.
Well, I had always thought that Brad Oh, what's his name? Doofus Jethro Cyrus, Billy Ray. I'd always thought Billy Ray was a little right wingy, but you know, there's charming. There was an interesting interview with Miley in Rolling Stone a few weeks back in which she said, you know, I used to think that my daddy was just kind of distant and goofy, but it turned out he was just stoned.
Oh, oh boy! Wow. She's really letting it all hang out, for sure.
So, get this, Juanita. The guy who's sitting next to Carrie Underwood, and they're, funny, Obamacare, is Brad Paisley, and Brad Paisley is a West Virginian. And so there's Brad Paisley making fun of people trying to get health insurance.
Yeah.
In a state where we have tons of uninsured people.
Well, you know, he'll
billy up, right?
Are you like us? We're not gonna get anything to help people.
No, no, no. We've got the Medicaid expansion.
Well, but your senators want to put it off.
Yeah, I know. Joe Manchin.
We're not getting the Medicaid down here. We're just getting whatever.
I thought Rick Scott was going to do that.
No, everything in the Congress went along with him. We've had this Republican Congress since God knows when, you know, way back yonder with Lawton Childs and everything. Lawton Childs, he tried to start a public health insurance that, you know, you could pay for if you were working and get on, you know, get help with. And at the time, I didn't have insurance where I was working. I was working full time. And, I would have loved that, but no, our Republican Congress, no way. And he tried to raise the minimum wage. And he's the one that was in there before, Jeb. And he beat the tar out of Jeb when Jeb was running against him. Jeb said, oh, he's insulted me. Just because he lost.
Right, yeah.
Couldn't handle the fact that he had lost against that hick. That guy, he was raised down here, Lawton Childs. But no, we're not getting the, I don't know what we're getting. We're getting something. But not the, they've turned down the Medicaid part of it. And so a lot of people are just going to be left out. You know, they'll have to either buy out or pay through the nose or whatever.
And of course, the same thing applies to Texas, where they have millions and millions and millions of uninsured people. And Rick Perry, Christian, is willing for them to just get sick and die.
Yeah. Well, Ted Cruz, he's the Messiah, ain't he?
Oh,
his daddy said he was.
Yes, well, and anointed him. Anointed him.
Huh?
Ted Cruz's daddy and some other weirdos oiled him up real good. They anointed him to be King of America.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Well, King of America.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's probably right.
I mean, you don't anoint political candidates. You don't anoint senators. You anoint kings.
Yeah, there you go. You do, don't you? Well, you know, his voice to me is so weird. I just would hate to have to hear that every day or every minute. You might have me playing it over and over in my ears so I wouldn't think about anything else if he got it in control.
Oh, he gives me, he's like a walking nightmare.
Some of the creepiest people, I mean, and a lot of them remind me of Hitler's main henchman.
Which one?
Which one reminds me of which?
Yeah.
Well, you got Frank Luntz. He's a propagandist.
True.
And you got me there, Bob. I wasn't expecting to answer that question.
No worries.
But I heard a good name for Sarah.
Oh, really?
I read it in that... it's one of the websites, I mean, one of the things I get emails on, now I forgot the name of it, but anyway, they call her Lady Blah Blah.
Well, I love what Charlie Pierce calls her.
What?
Princess Dumbass of the North Woods.
That's the best one.
Of course, you know, Caribou Barbie's awfully good, and Mussolini, Mooselini, is dandy, and I'm proud of my own little creation, Godzilla from Wasilla.
Well, you know, she's come out against the new pope.
Oh, I know. Isn't it?
She's too liberal.
Right.
Okay. Those people, I tell you. What's she going to do when she loses her looks? Man, nobody going to want
to. Loses? I think that process is well underway. Of course, then again, I never thought she had much to lose.
Well, you know.
That's probably sexist, and I apologize.
She's a holder, but a lot of people... Really?
Listen, I never wanted to judge her on her appearance or her gender or anything. My judgment of Godzilla from Wasilla has always been based upon the fact that she's an idiot. I have always judged Sarah and a liar.
A liar.
And she is filled with hate and poison. And so,
yeah,
you know,
there
my estimation and appraisal of Sarah Palin has always been based upon. What's that phrase white folks love to quote from Dr. King? The content of her character.
Yeah, she's got no character. She's you see her slurping her, you know, taking all those cookies around and slurping her big old drink, you know.
These little wing nuts are just so paranoid. That reminds me, you know that Rand Paul is afraid for America's donuts now, right? the Kenyan Muslim anti-capitalist is trying to take away America's donuts.
You know, he is he's up in heaven. You're not going to like his daddy, but him. He's a horrible person.
Juanita, his daddy's horrible too.
I'm sure, but he got the worst part of him.
Yeah, we know where the best part of him went.
Where? I don't know.
No, I'm being gentlemanly. I'm not going to do that. It is indelicate.
Yeah. Well. Anyway. Anywho, there's so much to talk about in so little time.
True.
But I saw something that made me cry. That I'm not going to take much more time. I saw something that made me cry on our PBS channel. It's in Tampa, and they showed some stuff from World War II. Different little clips.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was living in Tampa back then. My folks were working at the shipyards, and my mother cleaned the guns that went into the planes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would see, like, German prisoners of war, you know, going around. And my big thing I didn't like was that they could get the chewing gum and Baby Ruth. We couldn't get Baby Ruth. And, you know, they could get a lot of stuff we couldn't get, you know, as a kid.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, you know, some German prisoners of war were housed at the Greenbrier Resort here in West Virginia.
I'm going to tell you something after I finish this about that, about the German and that. I found out from this thing I saw was Howard Hawks made a movie about World War II while the war was going on, about the Japanese and a plane flying over.
Mm-hmm.
And he made it in Florida over there, close to where the prisoners of war were, because we had a lot of scrub, you know, palmettos and all that.
Right.
It was perfect. So, anyway, he didn't tell, I don't think it was a Coast Guard, but it was somebody, you know, because the enemy was coming over here, especially Germany, and blowing up some of our ships, you know, on the coast, off the coast.
Yeah.
And he didn't neglect it to tell them, and they were firing at those Japanese, you know, planes flying around from where the movie. I thought that was weird. I didn't know anything about it, but I was crying. I was seeing, like, the streetcars and all.
Oh.
It just, you know. Anyway, now you were talking about the Germans. I just want to say this. This is something I learned when the History Channel had some history on it.
That was a while back.
And they had a lot of World War II. When they were coming back after World War II was over, they were coming back, some of them on the ships, and you had black soldiers, our soldiers, our troops. They could not eat in the dining room. They had to get their food and go out and eat on the deck or wherever they could find a place to eat. Because, you know, they were segregated.
Sure.
Guess who could eat in there?
Oh, yeah.
The German prisoners. Well, can you imagine? I thought, boy.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Can you imagine what those people have gone through? And they had, like, so it showed some of the Tuskegee
Airmen. Yeah.
Airmen, and there's some of the women, the black women that were in service. And one black woman, she said, when we went over to England, they treated us so good, and people in France treated us so good, they didn't show any difference in the race. We come back home, and it's so different over here. And she said it just couldn't understand why.
And, well, and why? Yeah, because this country's founded on racism, Juanita. By the way, you got a note in from Steve. Steve says, can Juanita be my southern grandma or sister? And, you know, the way I look at that, well, you are. You are. It's the Horn family commune, right, Juanita?
I could be a great aunt or something.
Absolutely, a great auntie.
Yeah. I've got cousins that are my son's age, and they call me aunt. We say aunt down here, Bob.
No, oh, I know.
I'm sorry.
Well, there's parts of down there where you say ain't, you know, ain't be.
Well, true. I said that at one time. I think I got, you know, I got some education.
Right. No, I don't mean ain't as in he ain't heavy, he's my brother. I mean, you know.
Yeah, ain't.
Ain't Lou Ann and Uncle Bert, you know.
Right.
Juanita, you have yourself a lovely evening. It's so good to hear from you.
And I'm so glad I got on. And I don't know what he was talking about because I couldn't understand it when I tried to. What's his name?
David Barton,
yeah,
Kenneth Copeland.
I did.
Well, you're not supposed to understand it, Juanita. You're supposed to take it on faith.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. Okay.
Because remember, that's the Lord God above speaking through Kenneth Copeland. Just ask him. He'll tell you. Kenneth Copeland, not the Lord God above.
I did hear one thing you said about who could the Father be.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. Could it be Satan? Yeah. Yeah, it could be, Bob.
Yeah, it's kind of inescapable. Juanita, you take care.
Okay, you too. Night-night.
Bye now. Juanita calling from Central Florida. And so yes, that would be Auntie Juanita, Steve. So I love this little family we've got here. Thanks, Sal. Sal jumped in to help out with what Kate got started. That means that we are now at $135 to go for fundraising this evening. Be mighty helpful if we could get there, because again, not being here for 3 days is going to put us in a big, big, bad, deep hole. So thanks. Robert in Australia with a note. On being a warrior for God. Bob, one of the things that always perplexed me growing up in Catholic school was this. Why was it necessary for God to send one group of people to kill another group of people? Surely he could have just raised an eyebrow and had all those bad people disappear? Right to the cornfield, just like the Twilight Zone. At one point in the Bible, he or she stopped the world spinning. Sorry, stopped the sun setting, so some battle could just go on and on and on. Surely making bad people disappear would be easy. No, she's always sending the chosen people in to do the genociding. Just one of a very long list of reasons I've been a recovering Catholic for so very long. And Steve, with an observation about Brother Copeland and Brother Barton. How do these nutball Christians and so-called followers of the brown-skinned Palestinian itinerant rabbi and day laborer address this? Blessed are the peacemakers. If someone strikes you on your left cheek, turn and give them your right. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Whatsoever you do to the least of these my people, you do unto me. And we won't even touch the love of your enemies and pray for those who persecute you part. Bob, I actually take these admonitions seriously. I guess I'm not a Christian, and gladly so if this, and by this we're talking about Kenneth Copeland and David Barton, is what it means. All right, we've got some channeling going on. Oh, and I neglected to mention, Sal jumped in and helped out with Kate and with Randy. So, yeah, that's how we've gotten to $135 to go for fundraising this evening. Randy's channeling our pal Tracy. I haven't heard from the lady cab driver recently. All right, then. You've channeled her, Randy. And it goes on. By the way, I want to go back to, before I go to the phones, I want to go to what Juanita brought up from the Country Music Awards. This is A Pair of Millionaires. Brad Paisley and Carrie Underwood having a nice chuckle at the expense of poor folks.
Too hard, right?
Why is it spinning?
Oh, it does that.
Okay. Why is it smoking?
I don't Maybe we should restart it.
Obamacare by morning.
Jesus, mail it in much?
I'm gonna wind up with hemorrhoids if I sit here till dawn. We'll have cataracts and dementia. Oh, this is getting on my last nerve. Obamacare by morning. Over six people served.
F them. Yeah, that's real funny. I don't care who you are. That's funny. That's what that is. That's funny. Jesus. How tone deaf do you have to be? But you heard the audience roaring with gales of laughter and applause, didn't you? Because, you know, it's so funny when uninsured people die. That's a real knee slapper, Brad Paisley. I mean, that one's going to go over every time, Carrie Underwood, and I hope neither one of you ever sell another damn record. But you will. You will. And they just ruined Amarillo by morning for me. Bastards. Back to the phones. 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to jump in. We won't be conversating very much at all. Who am I kidding? Won't be conversating at all for the next, well, till Tuesday evening. So if you got something on your mind, best get it said this evening or it won't get said at all. 304-658-3333 or... via the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir.
What do you know, Bill?
Yeah, not much anymore, Bob. I know I'm about half out of my mind with this social service system up here. It's like, why bother? Maybe I should have get my shotgun out of storage and... Anyway, never mind.
No, you didn't say that. Agent Freddy was only kidding. He doesn't even have a shotgun.
Yeah, I'm a cynical kind of a person, and I'll laugh at myself, you know, whenever possible. Question number one. The city that caught hell in the Philippines, Tabacalan?
Tacloban.
Tacloban. Yeah, I've seen it before. What island?
Lady.
Lady, that's what I thought. I was thinking, is it Lady or Luzon? Because if you've read as much on the... Hell, I own two or three books on the Philippine campaign myself, and as I said, I just read Ghost Soldiers for the second or third time on tape. Yeah, that's what I thought it was, Lady. Yeah. Oh, brother, you know? And nobody wants to believe that this... The change in the weather is a little, you know, extreme, shall we say?
Yes.
I mean, we've always...
Well, just remember, Jim Inhofe says that it's the greatest hoax ever perpetrated upon the human race.
No, I thought that was the Bible.
Well, it is, but who's counting?
And what do I know? You know, it's
you can't say that in Oklahoma. They'll declare a crusade against you.
Well, good.
I don't know how Bart Kopp out there in Tulsa has managed to survive there as long as he has.
Yeah, well, that name is interesting. Is it, what, can you explain that to me, or is there a secret meaning behind that?
Who, Bart Kopp?
Yeah.
It is absolute, I'm trying to remember what, somebody will remember. But it goes way, way back to the early days of the internet, and,
Okay.
I can't remember it right offhand.
I know, if just, he was an officer or not.
No, he's not. He's just a handle.
Because it was strange. The one bar I played in was full of cops who were Vietnam veterans, and I'll tell you, they were a different bunch than a lot of these guys today. They're all mostly retired now, of course. And because did you ever see the scene of that security guard gassing those people in San Francisco or in the Bay Area. Which school was it? Berkeley, wasn't it?
No, that was UC Davis, I think.
Yeah, me. See, I used to get stuff sent to me by a friend of mine. It was all anti-Reagan, and so much of the stuff was coming out of Berkeley, I can't get it out of my head, you know. So much of the protesting of everything was coming out of there. And, and my computer's acting funny. The darn mouse seems to lock up and give me trouble. And we've got a couple experts in this field that are regular horn listeners. How bad was the hurricane? I'm an American, all right, hurricane. How bad was it on the other part of the world?
It just poured, just barreled right over. I mean, it ran right up Lady Gulf and blistered it. You know, it blistered that whole chunk of the archipelago.
I know it hit. I thought it hit Vietnam somewhere. Was it Laos? No.
No. Well, it probably did. I'm not real sure because most of the focus has been on. Has been on what's happened in the Philippines.
Yeah. My God, and of course that doesn't have anything to do with climate change, huh?
Nope. Well, it can't have anything to do with climate change because climate change is not real.
Yeah, well, climate changes four times a year here, doesn't it? what do you mean climate can't change? We see it all the time, for God's sake.
Right, but that's for God's sake, Bill. I mean, that's God making the climate change, not humans.
Yeah, well,
see, there. I mean, once you really begin to peel the onion that is climate change denial, there's all kinds of interesting stuff that you run across. Like, for instance, the fact that some of the denial is based in the fact that if humans can wreck the planet, then that speaks kind of directly to the impotence of the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. Now, doesn't it?
Yep. Well, there are some folks who. And believe me, when I was a youngster, Bob, there was nothing more beautiful than to walk into, with a red surplus and a white top on it, you know, serving a midnight mass with the creche and the, is that how it's pronounced? The birth scene and the beautiful lighting around it. And when you're 10 years old, man, that's, especially when you're being, conditioned to believe all this stuff over and over again. You speak Latin. I can understand a few phrases that we used to.
No, I don't. I've lost a lot of it. I never spoke it, but I could read it. Oh. But a lot of that's gone.
Well, we had to learn it to serve mass. You had to have that in your, a certain amount of it in your vocabulary too. Of course, the priests would get excited when you picked up the wine and brought it around to them. I should have noticed that, you know. I've seen the same look on people's faces in bars when they get served, you know. Give me that stuff there. Yeah, I'm going to miss the hell out of you because, it's my one conversation, except once in a while I talk to two other family members who are of an intellectual, three actually now, that they have something to say, you know, that makes sense because that's part of the trouble of the building I live in. I don't play bingo and I don't, you know what I'm saying? I don't speak their language either. They're a half a language ahead of me. They speak, most of them here are Balkan, World War II survivors. But they don't speak English at all for any good use. But I should talk. I had a late breakfast this morning with a father whose old man served on the submarines. So, the Nazi submarines. So that's, I shouldn't say too much. But I had a lot to say, except I know you're going away for good reason because you have to keep building this, the consensus, and things are so slow in this country. It's so hard to tear enough people. I saw the same thing in the 60s. A lot of the anti-war demonstrations were, there was a lot of real serious people there, but there was a lot of, is this where the party starts,
Yeah.
That kind of thing was popular, and fact, one guy that was working at American Greetings, and I'd see him at parties, was Mr. Crum. It was just a funny coincidence that, you know, you're in the same area with somebody, and if you were a certain age in a certain social group, you'd bump into him, and yeah, he was quite the character to say. And of course, everybody read his stuff, you know. But I'm having a real problem with this social service system. It's kind of a front. You think I'm correct in saying that a lot of it is front? A lot of it is full employment for social workers and other folks. And I think our buddy out in Colorado would agree with me about the group that's dedicated to people with poor eyesight, because it's a good employer of people with certain educations. And
well, you've got to have them fully employed, because social worker is the lowest paid college degreed profession in America.
We had a lot of them when I was a kid in the good old Catholic Children's Home, and people say, well, why did they put you out there? Did you break the law? I said, no, my mother was having some problems, and they decided to... problem was that I missed a lot of school because of asthma, which happens when you live in a four or a, you know, a two-bedroom apartment with two heavy smokers when you're a child, you know.
Yeah.
See, you at least could get away to the... your dad smoked?
Oh, yeah.
Of course. I mean, that was...
Mom did, too, until breast cancer came along, and then she kicked it. And she, by the way, she... She kicked cigarettes back in 1973 by replacing them with, and I've mentioned this brand before, Brock's, the B-R-A-C-H apostrophe S candy company.
Oh, yeah.
Brock's Butterscotch.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing else. And when she passed away in 1997 and we were taking care of all her stuff and cleaning things out, I found old purses that still had Brock's Butterscotch discs in them.
Well, believe me, what an improvement. Well, it was then, although we think we knew what was in more of what was in the stuff in those days than it may be today. That's the funniest thing about, you brought it up with the big pork factory being bought by China. And that makes me always laugh, too. You know, you've seen the movie A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned this, that my grandfather had made reservations at a place that closed, and we ended up having to go on by taxi cab. My grandpa didn't ever drive in his life. He was a machinist, but he never drove a car. So we ended up going to a Chin's Red Dragon restaurant, and like the kids in A Christmas Story, they were eating Christmas dinner, right? Thanksgiving dinner in one of those places, and I didn't like it much that day, but the rest of my life I've enjoyed the hell out of it.
Well, by the way, a note from Jeremy coming in. Please tell Mr. Stress that while you're away, I'll miss his conversation with you, and also Jim's words. They warm my heart, and I could listen to hours, just the two of them talking. That you're in Jeremy's thoughts and hopes the apartment issue works out in your favor.
Well, I hope it does, too. I'm just glad I don't have that 5-shot 12-gauge anymore. Because I might have remodeled the door by now, you know. It's temper is... Nah, I was... believe me, Bob, I was not a guy that took glory. And it was just... If a certain neighborhood you might be living in, an alarm system, and one of those was handier than waking up. Hell, I was living in Cleveland Heights in a nice place, and my first wife says, Bill, there's somebody in the room. And I sat up in bed, and it was the... young girlfriend of the guy next door. She had wandered in through the roof to the wrong house. My wife got off. One of the best one-liners, she used to, Bill, put a robe on, otherwise the woman will think I married you for your money.
That's good. That's good.
That was one thing that kept us going for 10 years. Is she could hit me and she could top me, and I was a master of the insult, and yet she'd nail me once in a while at, I was, when I started...
Well, you know, our youngest daughter, Doodle, You know who she reminds me of? You talk about wit and one-liners and just, you know, zinging somebody. She, in many ways, our youngest reminds me of, and this reference will not be lost on you, she reminds me of Gracie Allen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just wide-eyed and, well, what? And you know, saying things like, you know, which, I don't know, which state is Georgia in? You know, things like that.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah.
And then just turn around and just quick as can be, just zzz, and I mean, you're burnt before you know you, whoa, how'd that happen? And she routinely does it to her brother. They're only 14 months apart, those
oh, yeah.
two. People mistook them for twins when they were little. And I mean, she, zing! And he's helpless.
Yeah, kids like that, they build some great memories and stuff like that.
I'm probably talking way out of school, and maybe hopefully nobody's listening.
Well,
I mean, I don't mean nobody's listening, but at one point in time, teenagers being teenagers, Ferg said something about he thought it was time that he had some condoms on hand, and Doodle just looked at him and said, "What for? You're never going to use them."
Yeah, this.
Oh, from he went from white to red to purple, to green to.
And he wasn't angry.
No, he just realized he had been slashed all the way to the bone.
Yeah, and he walked right as the door was revolving, and he walked into it.
Hey, look, it's a rake. Whap.
Exactly. You know, I get a kick out of a lot of the callers, and you know, Jim, when he starts talking about those cats, I was that way with dogs. If you lived in certain parts of the city, every time you turned around, there was another one. And they, you know, I think I had five at one time, and which is probably illegal today. But I could afford them at that point in the time. The music was rolling, and the old lady was making over 50. So what the hell? Between the two of us, we could. I wasn't overly like if the vet came and told me the dog had something that some type of a cancer. Well, I couldn't afford it. But I never lost one. I lost them all. They were all in their teen years when they passed away, and it broke my heart. They ranged from a Chihuahua to a Jack Russell to a Cocker to a Pit and a Lab Dobe mix. Because people, you know, people just let dogs run loose and breed and...
Oh, believe me, I know. We've got them... We play a game now with garbage pickup here, in which we try to watch out the window for when the garbage truck turns to come up our road.
Yeah.
And then we start running bags out to the road. Because if we put them out like we live in civilized society, our garbage will be scattered from here to yonder.
Yeah.
And Maine to Spain by the next morning. And there's just something infuriating about that.
Well, yeah.
And of course we're out in the county, so there's no leash law or anything like that, and people just let them run. And you know, you mentioned a Christmas story,
the Bumpus,
yeah, the impassioned cries of Darren McGavin as he's Bumpuses.
Yeah.
Remember, the Bumpuses were West Virginians.
Where were they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He mentions that early on that the Bumpuses came from West Virginia. And they, you know, they had a pack of like 19 dogs that, you know, ate Darren McGavin's Thanksgiving
turkey.
Well,
the guy that wrote that book, Gene Shepherd, right? I think Gene.
Absolutely, yes.
Gene was a well-known radio personality in New York City at one time, and I read some of the magazine stuff he wrote, and he was a pretty funny guy.
Oh, hilarious! And his radio work was brilliant. In fact, a member of the Horn family has sent me, and I listen to it when I'm out on the road, a complete set of Gene Shepherd's recordings. And they're devastating. They're brilliant.
And, you know, you can see with some of the TV shows, you can see characters reborn. Who was the the butler that became a governor in another show.
No, he was the aide to the governor. Robert Guillaume played him.
Okay.
Benson. Benson. He was the butler on Soap.
Yeah.
And then he becomes the, I guess, chief of staff or something to the governor. Yeah.
If you ever hear much Jack Benny stuff?
Good bit, yeah.
Rochester could come back with a one-line insult that it wasn't really, it couldn't be too openly insulting for the audience of that day. But it was. And the butler part that Cal played had a lot of the same comebacks to people that were not, you know, because you had to be careful with that, I imagine, knowing the population of this country the way we do. And he was, I was lucky for a time they were filming a movie at this Euclid Tavern, where I played so many years, 20 freaking years, in University Circle, and what's his name, from Family, the little guy that has diabetes now.
Parkinson's, you mean?
Pardon me? Parkinson's, yeah.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, he was in it, and Joan Jett was the female lead, and the guy who was the bass player was... from Laverne and Shirley, Lenny. From Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny man. I can't think of his name either, Bob. It's terrible. I used to remember.
I'll have it in a matter of seconds in the chat room.
Yeah, somebody help bail the old guy out, will you? Give me a break here. As I say, I'm in pretty bad shape now because of the. They say my so-called case manager. Of course, when you say case manager to me, I think of somebody. With a big box of whiskey. Did you keep...
Yeah, Daffy Duck. I had just finished a case. Throws the beer bottles out the window. I needed a new case. Exactly.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head, though, with Robertson and...
Yeah, Michael McKeon, by the way.
That's it, Mike McKeon.
Thank you, Marty.
Yeah, thank you. Because he was... he and I were close to the same age, and I was... Hell, I was... If I was 40 or 41 or something at that time would surprise me, because I remember I was far back when, because they were filming up there, and I had, you know, because I practically owned the joint. I did an opening act. I did a show with Bonnie Raitt in 75 for the Women's Indochina Peace Committee. We did two shows. You know, you play one, and then I'd open, she'd come up, and then they'd turn the house and bring in a whole second crowd, and that's where the women, where the money went to. It was a benefit, and she went over to the one bar on a break, and she came back and said, "Your name's all over that place. You ought to own the place." I said, "Well, I help keep it open, that's for sure." But, she was quite good and very attractive. I was sitting there with my first wife, and I kept giving the old lady the elbow and say, "Hey, look how hard she's looking at me." Yeah, right. You know, and then my wife would come back and she wants to try to figure out what it is that she's looking at. But she was, you know, her father was a Broadway performer.
No.
John Raitt.
Had no idea.
Yeah, Raitt did a lot of Broadway musicals, but for some reason, he might have done a movie or so, but, and my sister was as in love with opera and classical music and Broadway shows as I was with rhythm and blues and jazz, you know. So it's a funny family there, you know. But yeah, because I could sit and I was still playing around with clarinet, and I'd sit there and play stuff like "Get Me to the Church on Time," you know, improvise it on a clarinet and have fun doing that. Because you are a product of what you've heard, and all these influences are so much the same that I don't know. All my buddies. Today, yeah, kick me in the ass and say, "Bill, you were supposed to go to school and get a history degree and be done with it," you know?
Oh, and the movie you're talking about, was that Light of Day?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 1987.
Yeah. 87? Well, I was older than I thought. I was born in 43, so that would make me, what, 44 at the time?
Yeah, Michael J. Fox, Gina Rowlands, Joan Jett, Michael McKeon, Tom... Thomas G. Waits. Is that Tom Waits?
Yep. He wasn't, I didn't see him around there. Otherwise, I would have been, crawling over on my knees to talk to the guy, if that's who it was. But it could have been him, but I don't know. I don't remember it being the Tom Waits, the singer. There's a guy.
No, it's not the singer.
Okay.
He's an American actor and acting instructor, according to Wikipedia. Or Rand Paul. I'm not sure who wrote that first. Oh, by the way, you got a note in. You got a note in from Kim in New York City.
Yeah.
It's a subject line. She just Kim says, "A word for social workers. I love Bill, but as a social worker, relatively new to the profession, I must defend the statement about social service agencies just being an employment scam.
In well, most not scams.
No. Well, wait here. In most charities and governmental agencies, most of the money goes to overhead and administrative expenses, and definitely not to us social workers. As you said, Bob,
amen.
We are the least paid and highest degreed of the professions. Just wanted to point that out. Dr. Stress. So, don't.
Well, I had a.
By the way, you've been promoted to doctor. Have you noticed that the last couple of nights?
Well, that used to happen a lot, too. People used to promote me like that. They got confused by the. And that name came. You know where that name came from? And I'll give you a hint. A friend of mine worked as a psychiatric attendant. In fact, he worked the same hospital that my first wife worked at. And that was a code. When somebody was having a physical uproar, they called over the PA, they called for Mr. Stress, and they told him where to go. And that meant all attendants would go to this area because somebody had busted loose from the medication. And I was telling somebody the story with the first band, and they said, what a great name. And being that I was the son of a long-term musician who had been playing in the 20s and 30s, so that was funny, too. He'd tell me stories that before radio got big, which, of course, was before jukeboxes existed, he said every small restaurant would have a four-piece band working. And it was a decent... And basically, what I always wanted was not stardom. I wanted to make a living doing something I loved to do.
Yeah.
Rather than something I hated, which I had plenty of jobs, Bob. I could a buddy of mine in Arizona. He's doing all this rebuilding of metal work on this copper mine, and he has to size it and cut it, and all the fastening is done with nuts and bolts or hardware because welding wasn't invented yet. They didn't have welding gas, And he always says. He said, you were one of the best backyard mechanics I ever saw. Well, that's because, Bob, when my eyes worked, you read everything you could. And this is your line of work, too. Read everything you can get your hands on before you, Well, anyway, I've tied up enough of them, but have a good time up good,
Yeah.
Let me see. Somebody's trying to get me anyway. Have a good
All right. Take care, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. He is. There's nobody like him. Nobody like him. Thanks going out, by the way, to Rob and to Jug of Punch. Thank you very kindly. That takes us. Almost down to done with fundraising for tonight and whatever we can do to take care of the. Thursday and Friday that I won't be here, or Monday. But thank you very much, Rob, and thank you, Jug of Punch from the chat room. It means a great deal. Not sweating and halfway flipping out while I'm gone, just worried about things back here. Makes a big difference. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Well, The Conjuring worked.
That is so funny because I was thinking about you guys the other day when, I don't know where to start, when I had a customer that made a joke about lynching.
Oh, what a knee slapper.
Well, I picked up this group of people from the airport, and so they were talking about, things. A couple of them were Jewish because they were talking about, growing up and going to the Poconos and all that and whatnot and so forth. So then this guy was saying that he was on his flight, he was watching 42, but the movie, the flight ended before the movie, so he didn't get to see the end. And somebody remarked to him, oh, it's too bad you didn't get to see the end. And he's like, oh, I know how it ended. And I'm thinking he's going to say how Jesse, I keep saying Jesse, how Jackie Robinson went on to become one of the greatest baseball players, blah, 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 blah. No, he says he gets lynched, doesn't he?
What?
And I'm like, and you know, me being me, I'm like, okay, I'm not.
He finished with baseball, and then he became an executive with the Chockful of Nuts Coffee Company.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we know. Come on, Bob. Come on. So me being me, I'm like, okay.
I mean, was it followed with a guffaw or?
Yeah, it was. Like, and so.
Oh,
but the
yuck.
Other people in the cab were like, you could hear that audible gasp. Like, do you not see that the person driving us is black? You idiot. So. And so I had to take the time, because I was about to pull over and kick his ass out. But then I said, you know what? No, I'm going to take some time to educate this idiot about. I said, do you understand what you just said? Do you know what lynching is? I said, you know, that men would be, you know, castrated while alive and set on fire. Do you know that? People would go to bed on a regular basis not knowing if they were going to wake up in the morning and just being lynched just because. Not because you did anything wrong or anything like that. It's just because. I said, do you know how many black people were lynched in per capita in this country? Do you know that my family left the South running for their lives to keep my uncle from being lynched or my grandfather from being lynched? I said, do you realize this? I said, do you realize that, you know, we had our own Holocaust here in this country. I said, at least, you know, when during the Jewish Holocaust, when they, the fortunate ones that escaped Europe, at least they had another country to go to. We didn't. We weren't even allowed, you know, treated fairly in other parts of the country, but they were better. It was better than the South. I said, how dare you? You making a joke about Lynch would be the same as me making a joke about the Holocaust. And then he says, well, all white people say, well, you know, I didn't mean it that way. Oh, you just overreacted.
Really? You got whitesplained?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the people in the cab were just like, I told him, I said, you know what, you just need to really shut up at this point. You really just need to be quiet, because, baby, you know what?
You know, you've seen Cash Cab and Taxi Cab Confessions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Tracy, you need a taxi cab reality show.
Yes, I do. I just when I hear stuff like this.
Tracy explains,
you know,
the world to you between LAX and downtown.
Exactly. Especially, you know, like I told you what I told my brother a while back. I said, every time I make a white person think or make them uncomfortable, an angel gets his wings. What?
No, that's just good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, for you to even think that anything of, you know about lynching, Bob. I mean, you grew up in the South. Your family grew up in, you know, your family was from the South. And it's like, you got to wonder how somebody can fix, as my grandmother used to say, how could you even fix your mouth to say anything jokingly about lynching? I mean, when you know for a fact that white people used to gather and have parties to have during lynching? Really? That was fun. You know, it keeps the...
Oh, there were picnic baskets involved.
Exactly. You know, I just, like I said, when people make light of certain situations, it boggles my mind, because I'm going...
Well, that, you know, you bring up an interesting point, and I was just kind of flashing on this. We have two holidays in this country. We just passed one of them. We have a holiday that commemorates people who have died in warfare. That's Memorial Day at the end of May.
Right.
We also have Veterans Day, which honors anybody who has been in the service of the United States. On the other hand, we have to cram the entire history of the civil rights movement into Dr. King's birthday, and then we get the shortest month of the year for Black History Month. How about an Injustice Memorial Day?
Can we have an Injustice Memorial Day? That'll be the day when we
reflect upon the lives lost to lynching, to capitalistic excess and greed, like the Haymarket Massacre and the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. Mm-hmm. It'll be the day when we reflect upon the genocide of nearly an entire people on this continent. Let's call it Truth and Reconciliation Day, Tracy.
Right. Let's do that. Let's call it you're done fucked up and we need to call you on your shit day.
Or how about we call it Let's Quit Effing Up Day.
Right. How about that? Let's call it that.
I always love to share stories with you, Tracy, that I know will make you drive down the highway hooting like a barn owl. I got one for you here. Speaking of people being oppressed, apparently, do you remember when Bill O'Reilly got his ass sued for sexually harassing a woman and saying that he wanted to rub her with falafel and right? Remember that?
Oh yeah.
He's incapable of learning. So he had Alan Combs and Monica Crowley. She's an idiot right winger. He had them on for some little panel discussion, and the topic was whether or not a middle school football coach screwed up when he took the team as a treat to Hooters. And Bill O'Reilly couldn't understand why people were upset at the middle school football coach for taking the team to Hooters.
Look, I can't even, you know, I transport kids to and from school, right?
Yeah.
I can't even, you know, how when you put a car seat in, I can only strap in the car seat, okay? I can't even buckle the kids into the car seat. It's verboten, okay? You cannot, because of the accusations and stuff about touching, you know. So here I am. I can't even put little babies in a car seat, okay? But this person thinks it's okay to take, you know, children to Hooters. I'm a grown-ass woman, and I can't even go. I don't even want to go into Hooters.
See why I save these stories for you, Tracy? That's just the first outer layer of the onion. It gets better.
There's more.
Yeah, it's absolutely a Pocket Fisherman commercial. It's a Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more. If you continue listening to Bill O'Reilly, you will run around the room screaming twice. So he engages Alan Combs and Monica Crowley, right-wing freak, on why it is that everybody's upset about the middle school football coach taking the boys to Hooters for some T&A. And yes, the phrase T&A was used in the exchange.
Quit playing. Quit playing. Why are you messing with me?
But wait, don't waste the screaming yet. It's going to be ever so much better. So in the midst of being perplexed at this, the falafel man says, and I mentioned this to you because you, like so many others in the Horn family, are in California.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like letting transgendered students go into the girls' locker room.
Okay, what?
Listen, if the guy goes into the girls' locker room, there's going to be what you just described, but you're okay with it, O'Reilly exclaimed. Have you ever been in a locker room, Combs? They don't have chicken wings, but it's called a locker room for a reason. Do you see what I'm saying?
And people pay him to talk.
That Combs, he's down with the transgender going into the opposite locker room, but he won't take the kid to Hooters?
Okay, so first of all, if you're transgender, you identify with whatever. Oh, I don't even want to go. Okay, because I don't have to explain transgender to our audience, so I'm just going to leave that alone.
But this is the thing. In the mind of the guy who wanted to assault a woman with fried Middle Eastern food, falafel. Food.
And now, you know what? Now
another
falafel.
Yeah, I know.
I'm done with falafel, and I love me some falafel. So now I'm mad that he didn't took away my right to eat falafel.
Well, you'll be happy to know you're not the only one suffering right now. Steve just wrote in to say, "I just ate the tennis ball." You know, instead of just just chewed right through it. In the weird, sick, twisted mind of the man who wanted to assault a woman with fried Middle Eastern food.
And he doesn't even like Middle Eastern food.
A women's dressing room is the same
thing
as Hooters. I mean, any woman that appears on that program, I wouldn't be comfortable in the green room. You never know when Billo's going to just blow through the door and say, "F it, we're doing it live." Thing sucks.
Oh, speaking of bills, okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
I have two friends that are getting married, and I'm officiating my first wedding. Yay!
Yay you!
Yay me! Now, my friend, they're two lesbians. One of them works for, wait for it, Bill Handel.
Handle on the law.
And so, now they know me. Because he's coming to the wedding.
Wow.
And so, they're like, so I said, sweetie, look, you don't have to worry about me. I won't go all Malcolm X on the man or anything like that. I will behave myself. But it just tickles me because
he's not that well. You might explain to folks who Bill Handel is.
Oh, okay. I only know very little about him, but he's a talk show host out here. Nowhere near as bad as Bill O'Reilly, but yeah.
And nowhere near as good as me, right?
And nowhere near as good as you.
Thank you.
But he's what is he? I mean, what would you call him? Is he? He's not crazy right wing, is he?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard him so few times. I really don't have him pinned down.
Okay. Well, he's not crazy right. I mean, he's ordained. He even offers to marry them, but he does say some outlandish. Okay, come on, chat room family, start looking the man up so we can educate me and Bob. Because, like I said, I heard the name and I cringe. Because I knew that there was something horribly wrong with that. And so when they came to me to ask me to officiate, I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. Because that way I don't have to worry about listening to this man. But the last few days I had an aunt die. I had a really good friend of mine who was like a grandfather to me. He called me Sunday to say he wasn't feeling well, and he drove himself to the hospital. By the time I called and checked on him, he was in a coma, and it looked like he had a stroke. And then another friend of mine, her mother died, and I'm just like, I didn't want to even answer the phone. But then I saw that Duncan's like, Bill is being filmed. Bob is channeling you. I'm like, I miss my peace. I'm going to have to call in. But it's just, I had a customer today this morning. He's from the UK, and we were talking. Because it's a, okay, I'm going to hurt your feelings right now. What's your temperature right now at home?
Here in the studio, we're all the way up to a toasty 66 degrees.
Outside, what is it?
Probably 35, maybe
okay.
30.
It's 5 o'clock here, and it's 72 degrees.
Yeah. I hate you.
So we were talking about, you know, he's only in town for a couple of days. He's really enjoying the weather. And so we were talking about, you know, gun control here versus in the UK. I'm like, well, there's none here. And, we had a really good conversation. And I was telling him how I've been to London. And he's like, oh, when did you go? I said, right after, you know, Obama's first inauguration. And he's like, Obama's very popular in the UK. I'm like, oh, really? Because he sure as hell ain't here. And he's like, well, why? He's a mate, you know, this and this and this. I said, oh, well, because he's black. And my customer, who's white, was like, wait. You know, in the crispest British accent that you could possibly come up with. He was just appalled. He's like, wait a second. It's not because of his politics or anything like that. I'm like, no.
Lotto, it's about race.
You know, people try to say, well, it's about...
It's a chore trying to explain race to somebody who is not from the U.S.
Yeah.
To explain the weird, sick, twisted relationship this country has with race. And speaking of which, you got a note in from Kate. Subject line, so, Tracy, did the racist pig who got the history lesson from you tip you? And then she just
very
says...
Well, actually.
Really? Shamed him into a good tip, did you?
Yeah, no, and actually I told him, don't think this tip should make you feel better, you're still an asshole.
Ooh, nice. So, Kate says, keep it between the white lines, sister.
I can't... did I tell you that I called him? Yeah, I said, you know what? It is so funny and amazing to me how entitled white men are in this country, because only an entitled white man would make a joke about lynching. I went there too.
It's a product of privilege.
I'm like, I've often wondered what it's like to be privileged in this country, because I sure as hell am not. So, you know, explain to me. I talked from him all the way from the airport, because this happened like 10 minutes out of the LAX. So from LAX all the way to West Hollywood, he was my bitch.
I take it that's a bit of a poke.
Yeah. And on top of that, I told him, because he, you know, when he said, don't be so sensitive and, you know, all that, I said, you know what, sweetie? Because they were here on business. And I said, you're very lucky you never mentioned what company you work for, because I promise you this, had I known the name of your company and the name and your name, I'd be on the phone tomorrow morning calling your corporate office, writing on Facebook, and tweeting about what kind of people represent that company. I said, you may think I'm overreacting, but how do you think if you were at work? And you said the same thing, and we were co-workers, and you said the same thing to me at your workplace. How much would it have cost you right now? It'll be a hell of a lot more than this cab ride, I'm telling you now.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, Tracy, I thought of you when that whole bit of gun-inspired monstrosity was taking place out at LAX.
Speaking of gun, you know, right there.
Were you there?
No, fortunately, and here's the scary part. It was my son's airport day, because I don't know if I mentioned, he drives a cab, too. And it was my, what they call, pink day, which means if the airport is busy, they call in cabs for, you know, that's their airport day is coming up to go and handle, you know, extra business. So, but I don't typically go to the airport on Fridays because it's a hot mess. But I'm watching all this. My son wasn't there because he doesn't go in between the school runs because it happened in the morning. And there again, I'm talking to Jan, and we looking at each other, and I, you know, she called me in a panic thinking that I might have gone to the airport. And I'm like, no. And, you know, we both were having this conversation about gun violence in this country and how I think I put this on the Facebook page. I shared it. I think I shared it on the Horns Families page where, you know, the Republicans are all for pro-life and stuff, but they'll cut food stamps and medical aid people but won't do anything about gun control. What about my right to live?
Well, there is that.
What about my right to go to the grocery store, to the mall, or wherever I may choose, and not have to worry that some asshole with an AK-47 or any kind of assault rifle will not come in there and blast me away just because, I don't know, he didn't get his dick sucked right the day before I...
Well, and speaking of gun bullies, a little follow-up to a story we had a couple of days ago that happened over the weekend. Remember, did you see the story where the gun goobers laid siege to Blue Mesa Taco Grill in Arlington, Texas, because the Moms Demand Action four ladies were lunching inside?
No.
Yeah, and they had an open carry walk over to the Blue Mesa to let them know that they meant business. And they were standing there with semi-automatic assault rifles and whatnot, just waiting for the Moms Demand Action ladies to come out so that they could make sure that they understood that they weren't going to get their freedom protectors. So it was all painted as you know, it was just a coincidence. But lo and behold, it turns out, and I, you know, how this is not a crime. A, open carry is not legal in Texas. So, but none of these goons have been charged with anything, when in fact they were violating the law. So it turns out that this loser who was part of the gun goons that stalked and laid siege to and set up an ambush for Moms Demand Action took to bragging. He said, "I am happy to report today that our secret open carry walk in Arlington, Texas went off awesomely. We had about 40 people all told. We heard that the Moms Demand Action group was meeting at Blue Mesa, so we crashed their
What is Moms Demand Action? Is it an anti-violence group or something?
Yeah, they're demanding action on access to firearms that, you know, get children murdered in schools and stuff.
Okay.
We heard that the Moms Demand Action group was meeting at Blue Mesa, so we crashed their anti-gun party. That was the secret. You believe this crap? And the woman from one of the women from Moms Demand Action says that they get constant threats of murder and rape from the Freedom Protecting Gun Owners.
See, this is why every day I pray hard and hold my girl tight. We had somebody running in the neighborhood, the police chase in Sherman Oaks last night, which, you know, that's not supposed to happen. You know, I moved out of the hood just for that. But I don't understand. I thought surely after the whole thing that happened in Connecticut that we would get better guns. I just knew. Little children were killed. I'm sorry to say, little white kids. Okay. I just knew. Okay. Now, we're going to do something about this. Because they don't care about little brown children being shot and killed off. So, still no. It's going to be a year in next month, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's one of those.
Oh, and it turns out Beth just dropped me a note from Dallas Way, and she says open carry law in Texas applies only to handguns. Long guns, both rifles and shotguns, can be legally carried almost anywhere by almost anyone. So, I guess the next question. And thanks, Beth, for clearing that up because that Well, but that still leaves some questions open, doesn't it, Tracy? Like, for instance, when you openly carry your rifle to go and stalk someone, I mean, it doesn't that make it, doesn't that to some degree or another make it a gun crime?
Or when you threaten somebody with a gun, or, again, you know, I just, like I said, with everything that's been going on, you know, I try to be happy. I keep planning, going, I'm planning a wedding, a day, so I'm going to be performing my first marriage in a month. And so I'm like, you know what? It's a good, I'm going away for Thanksgiving. I'm leaving out on the 23rd, and we're flying up to Seattle. Spend a day in Seattle, then we're going to drive up to Vancouver, spend a day in Vancouver, and then come back to Portland, where I am going to be chained to the kitchen in my sister's house.
Worst places.
And not let out until the macaroni and cheese and the greens are done.
Oh, the greens.
The greens. You know, because I do that collard turnip.
Mm-hmm. Work a little, you work a little mustard greens in there just for the just for the kick.
And no salt pork for us. We do the smoked turkey leg.
I understand. Sometimes tradition has to give way to good sense.
But with all that said, I have a customer, and I'm tell everybody, and I'm telling everybody in the Horn family, I love y'all, and I miss you. My prayers to all, and pray for me during my time of bereavement. I'm, you know, this was killing me about my aunt passing away. I'm happy that she is now no longer dealing with chemotherapy and dialysis and all that, but I'm more than likely the funeral will be next Saturday, and I will be gone. So I'm feeling a double loss there because I won't be there to tell her, you know, goodbye. Because you know how us black folks do a funeral, homie. You know, we throw down. But just like I said, just tell everybody that, you know, this is a word of prayer for me because my family is going through it right now. But
we will keep you. We will surely keep you in our thoughts.
Weeping may endure for the night, but joy surely cometh in the morning. And with that said, I love y'all, and hope the next time I promise I won't stay gone too long.
Yeah, we worry. You know, we worry.
I pop up every now and then just to give you a hoot and a holler and say howdy do.
Indeed, Tracy, you have a good afternoon and drive careful.
Always, baby, always.
All right, bye now. A lady cab driver somewhere on the roads of L.A. That's Tracy. And I got something. I'm going right back to the phones. I promise I am. But I got something here that Ron and Raleigh went and found and sent along that I just got to share. This is one of those moments I wish we could see the video, too. Ron's note with the link said, who is that 24-year-old whippersnapper blowing the harp? It's 1967. It's at a place called the Coffee House in Cleveland, Ohio. It's a benefit. May the 14th, 1967. A benefit to raise funds for the legal defense of a Cleveland bookseller named Jim Lowell and a poet who had been charged. The poet's name is the poet is D.A. Levy. And he'd been charged with obscenity, he and the bookseller, you know, for poetry. So a little old band steps up. Thank you. 46 years ago, and a 24-year-old Mr. Stress working it with the Mr. Stress Blues Band in a benefit for free speech. By the way, this coming in from Beth, more info on the stalking of the Moms Demand Action women. It is the fact that it was a planned event. They stalked them on purpose. In other words, as far as I can tell, it's kind of a confession of crime, but, you know, who the hell am I? Thanks, Beth. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jeremy. What's happening?
Hey, about that nice little duo that you had at the Country Music Awards. I don't know if you remember, it was a couple years back when Carrie Underwood got her start. She had that popular song, Jesus Take the Wheel.
Oh, my God. Is that her?
Yes, about how if she was in a car accident with a kid, she'd throw up her hands and close her eyes and God would save her.
Oh.
The car spun wildly out of control off a cliff somewhere. And then you top that off with Brad Paisley being the guy that wrote the song The Accidental Racist about Southern people not knowing what...
Was that Brad Paisley?
Yes, that was Brad Paisley and LL Cool J.
Yeah, because I remember talking about that and how that was a really not good idea.
Yeah, and I bought it for the sake of getting it because I wanted to see what it was about because I used to be a fan of LL Cool J. That was a mistake. I lost a lot of respect for LL Cool J after the fact I saw someone's acting. But the last line in that song, LL Cool J essentially says, "I'll forgive you for the chains if you forgive me for the color of my skin."
Hoo-wee. Somehow that doesn't strike me as an equal bargain.
Not at all. So when you said they made that little song making fun of Obamacare, here are two wildly rich people who don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. But it sure is funny when people can't get insurance. Jesus.
Obviously a dig at Obama because they're probably both, you know, whatever. But those two, there's just the two monumental stupidity between the two of them and their two wonder hits they wrote that made me giggle when they made that stupid song.
Oh, God. Well, and you had to love the O'Reilly story, too.
You know, I think I missed that part.
Oh, lucky you. Yeah, where O'Reilly says that... A woman's locker room, an athletic locker room, is the same thing as the Hooters. It's all just T&A to him.
Come again?
Yeah, and he got there. This is the fun part, Jeremy. He got there by of course referencing transgendered people and bathrooms in California.
What, Edith? What?
See? What, Edith? Huh? Yeah, that's what that guy needs. He needs somebody just to look over at him every now and go, stifle!
This coming from the guy, and I was beat on this because I love this, because I have this on good authority from my friend who I spoke of the other night who's in the military and has been to Iraq and Afghanistan twice. He was in a few of the crews in Afghanistan and Kandahar that were in the mountains and in the valleys, freezing their asses off, burning O'Reilly's books because they were bullshit.
Yeah, you're kidding. That's beautiful.
And O'Reilly donated. He made a big deal out of this because it was a tax write-off, of course, to him to help pay for the expense of writing that stupid book about murdering Abraham Lincoln or whatever it was, the assassination, which was full of infactual facts.
Yes.
Go figure from...
Factually challenged, I think.
Right. Factually challenged. Complete lies, in other words, though. But anyway, he donated a bunch of them because it was a write-off, so he would get some of the money back from his wasted book, which people automatically saw as bullshit. And he sent over, I think, like a half million to the troops saying, oh, they need good reading material and good things to keep them in the spirit of America while they're fighting the good stuff over in Afghanistan. And they took them by the box full and basically said, who's going to read this shit, and tossed them in the fire for firewood.
Somebody would just make Bill O'Reilly's day by telling him that.
I'm sure he knows, but he probably doesn't care. Because, again,
right, he got paid
for him, which, right, he got paid, and it was a tax write-off to cover whatever expenses were left by doing that. So this guise of in good spirit and for fighting brothers and sisters is just bullshit from him from the first get-go. I mean, this is another chicken hawk who never served a day in the military or ever thought of it.
That's...
And yes, I really think chicken hawks are an ironic thing after my story from the other night. But
No, there's nothing. There's no irony there.
I just mean the fact that I didn't end up going through basic all the way, that I almost made it through before they separated me. I do find a little irony in that I can call him a chicken hawk at the same time. But he is.
Oh, he absolutely is. The yellow streak down Bill O'Reilly's back is about 6 miles wide.
That's still not quite as wide as Rush Limbaugh's.
Well, that's because Bill O'Reilly's not quite as wide as Rush Limbaugh.
Maybe ego, he's as big as Rush Limbaugh, though.
Yeah.
He's almost got a bigger ego than Rush.
With talent on loan from God. Margin call! Yeah.
And he can beat us all with one hand tied behind his back, too.
Oh, half his brain.
You know what I found extra nauseating was last week on the build-up to the typhoon that hit the Philippines. I have a few channels around town, and also if you listen to iHeartRadio like I do occasionally, it's Clear Channel, so you can have an idea of what their mindset is.
Right.
But in a couple of situations, an advertiser for his show would come up, and they must have played that week building up the typhoon last week no less than 30 times the clip of him saying that Al Gore got rich off this global warming bullshit, basically, and that it's not real and it's not happening. Now, since what happened in the Philippines, I have not heard that clip played once. But up until leading to, I heard it no less than 20 times.
Yeah. Speaking of stupid on that level, I was telling the story to Ferg the other day about, and this really does tell you how simple these idiots are. I don't know. I haven't heard it in so long. I don't know it, but the intro music for the Hannity show. You know, the Hannity job, the life support system for a haircut.
Yeah.
The intro for that used to be a Martina McBride ditty called Independence Day.
Yeah, it was about
a battered wife finally having had a belly full and not, you know, taking it anymore. But that's... No, it says Let Freedom Ring in there. That's going to be our intro, Sean. It's awesome. It speaks to freedom.
We're talking about different kinds of freedom here, Bob.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, it's kind of sad because I'll admit that song is kind of catchy, even though it deals with kind of a harsh subject. It's a catchy song because of the way it's written and the background instrumentals to it. I like that song. When I heard Sean use it, I became disgusted with myself because I realized how he was using it and warping the whole idea of that song. You know, before Martina McBride did that, the Dixie Chicks did the one about Goodbye Earl, whatever it was, about killing an abusive husband there, too.
Yeah.
Before their career was poo-pooed by saying Bush was an asshole. So, none of this really shocks me. Hey, by any chance, did you hear, I think it was last weekend... Maybe it was the weekend before. Yeah, I think it was the weekend before. Out in the Midwest, there's two small planes that went up carrying 19 parachuters.
Yeah, and there was a mid-air collision?
Yeah, you know how many people died?
How many?
None.
Because they had parachutes.
Well, no, the 19 parachuters jumped out. The pilot of the wing of the plane that got cut off had a parachute and bailed out, too. And the guy with the disabled other plane was able to land it safely without crashing. Now, if you want to talk about a stroke of luck, there's a true stroke of luck.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize
equally,
that.
equally baffling, I heard another story from the Midwest from about the same time frame. And you can make it what you want, but again, it's one of those things that makes you scratch your head wondering how this happened. There was a lady, I want to say she was in her 50s, rode through some standing water when it was heavy rains. Little did she know the road was washed out. Her car got pulled downstream to a standing body of water. I don't know if it's a pond or something, but anyway, it was deep enough the car was going to sink. People witnessed the happens during the daytime, and she called up her brother because she didn't want to swim and wasn't going to leave the car, and basically called to say goodbye to him, and I'm not going to make it because my car is going to sink. Well, as her car is filling up, someone swam out to this car, which wasn't too far from shore, and kept trying to bash on the windows to try to get her out. The windows wouldn't break. They couldn't get the door open because of the negative pressure between the inside water and the outside water wasn't equal yet. So everybody from the shores watched this car fully submerged. We're talking in probably 12 feet of water and at least 6 feet over her head, over the top of the car. Well, anyway, this guy dove down, had his eyes closed, and kept putting his hand towards the window trying to feel an opening. He felt a hand. He kind of shocked him. He pulled back his hand, put his hand back in wherever he got it to, pulled her out to the surface. She almost drowned him in the process because she was so terrified what was going on. But he ended up saving her. When they towed the car out of the water, and there's video of this, every window was closed and all the doors were locked from the inside.
Whoa.
So it wasn't just hearsay. It happened. It's one of those things. Makes you scratch your head and wonder sometimes. I mean, did something.
Jesus take the wheel.
Yeah, but it isn't the same. It's not Carrie Underwood singing it, making it sound obnoxious.
That, well, there's that. And I just saw something, it's no big deal, but Tina Turner has relinquished her American citizenship. How about that?
Has she given a reason?
Well, she's been living in Switzerland for 2 decades.
Right.
And she's married to a German record producer, so...
There's a show on Nat Geo now called Nazi Hunters, and it's about World War II Nazis that are still, occasionally they're still finding one here and there. I think there was one from the United States last year, and he was like 93, and they deported him. But they did all their work to find Nazis from World War II, but they won't touch the two from here from America. You know what I'm talking about, Bush and Cheney.
Yeah.
They won't touch them. And I don't know if you heard, I'm sure you did, Dick Cheney canceled a flight to Canada about 3 weeks ago because he said it was too dangerous to go to Canada. I think it was Toronto. He was going to give a speech at some energy conference. And basically, just like Bush when he was going to fly to, I think it was Switzerland or something to do something, people in Canada were signing a petition saying arrest him on the spot, try him for war crimes. He wouldn't go because he was too terrified of the fact that something would happen, but he used it with the guys, it was too dangerous.
Wow.
So, we have to take some sort of...
Well, yeah, I mean, by too dangerous, that means too entirely possible that Dick Cheney could find his way to a lovely moment in the sun standing in the dock at The Hague.
Exactly, and... Whatever small amount it is, we have to take joy in the fact that a bunch of these buffoons from this administration are essentially prisoners in their own little worlds now, entrapped in this country because it's the only place they probably really are totally safe. Even though I risk a guess that if they did leave, nothing would happen. But the mere fact they think something might happen, none of them are leaving their comfy little abodes.
No, that's why George W. Bush is reduced to giving keynote speeches to Jews for Jesus.
And charging like $500,000 a pop.
$100,000 tickets. But of course they won't announce whether or not a dim leader is being compensated for his speech.
No, they won't. And unfortunately, I would have to guess that in his own right, even though he's been giving a Nobel Peace Prize, whatever reason that was, dear president's going to face the same kind of stuff when he leaves office.
Oh,
will not be exiting the country too much with all the drone strikes he's done.
No, I think he'll be. I think he'll be welcome all over the place. Because it does not mean to. Well, I can't make any blanket statements, but it's kind of like what Tracy said about the guy from the UK. You know, why isn't he liked? I mean, there are still a lot of people who think Barack Obama is a transformative figure.
To me, he's Bush on steroids in terms of some of his policies he signed and re-signed and re-upped even stronger than before when Bush signed them.
Yeah, I get a little queasy with the Bush on steroids argument, but that, I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just, they're not the same people. I mean, they're really, really, really not the same people. Now, they are, I think they are both serving the same controlling interest because every president does.
Right.
Every president has to deal with Wall Street. Every president has to deal with the so-called business community before we deal with or at least it's been that way since at least Richard Nixon.
And I know as American citizens we all half-heartedly joke, but everyone knows that jokes are based somewhere in truth. That's why sometimes they're funny. Except when they're not funny to most of us. But we always hear that story about when a president is elected to office, basically they're taken to a back dark room somewhere, and something close to the men in black show up and say, congratulations, you won the election. Now here's how things are going to be.
Yeah.
To some extent, I have to think that might almost happen.
Well, yeah, it's the Bill Hicks bit where right after the president's sworn in, they show him footage of the Kennedy assassination, and the new president goes, "Wait a minute, this is not the Zapruder film," and the CIA guy goes, "Exactly," and the new president says, "Where do I sign?"
Speaking of the Zapruder film, Nat Geo. I still like Nat Geo, even though I don't believe half the stuff they put out anymore, did a little special on the magic bullet. And they tried to poo-poo that first shot that was taken by saying that it bounced off a light post. And conveniently, that light post has been replaced since the 60s, so they'll never be able to find the bullet mark to prove what happened. And they're saying that first bullet bounced off the light post and struck the sidewalk and concrete way down by that underpass where they all fled after the shooting and made some cement fly up and cut some guy underneath the eye. That's their theory on that bullet, that they're trying to get rid of any other kind of ideas out there about.
Wow.
But I'm sure someone else would like to speak, so I'll let them speak.
Jeremy, it's good to hear from you.
You too. Have a good trip.
Take care. Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye now. Jeremy calling from Vermont and onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's going on, Bob?
Oh, just hanging on and hanging in, Jim.
Are you? Well, you getting ready to go on your flight?
Yeah, I've got my bags packed, so getting out of here probably, well, not supposed to have any hard weather tonight, so probably get out of here about 8 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And I'll arrive in Duluth at 6:30 tomorrow night.
Very good.
Here to Atlanta, Atlanta to Minneapolis, Minneapolis to Duluth.
Well, that sounds like quite a flight. I just wanted to a few comments. Number one about people in trouble in the water. When I was younger, I was lifeguard, and also I picked up my WSI too. And you know, it's funny when you see somebody who has gone under, but the cardinal rule is it's better for one to drown than two, and you always take something with you for them to grab hold to, and then you can get them on a novice assist or a cross chest carry, or you have to literally let them fight it out.
Yeah.
To the point that they go down. And I've seen people in a fetal position on the bottom. And that was once. It taught me a lesson about that. And second thing is, you were talking about, who was it? Somebody talking about boot camp?
not really, but sort of.
That's okay.
Well, no, that was Jeremy talking about his experience.
Yeah, I remember mine too. In my junior senior year, on July 3rd, I had a collapsed lung, 1,600 cc's out of left side of my chest, and so they put me in Roper Hospital in Charleston. It was kind of touch and go there, but they did a closed thoracotomy, and they reinflated my lung. And just 3 weeks later, I was at Air Force summer camp. And there were guys still who couldn't pass the run, the PT test. But I was so happy that I was able to overcome that.
Lord, yes.
I mean, I didn't know if it was going to blow out or not. Dr. Stallworth, who was the doctor, said, you can go if you want to. I'm not going to stop you. Well, I said, no. I ain't gone this far to, shovel shit in Louisiana. But I'll tell you, and that whole run that they had was not like a track. It was just up and down, up and down. It was kind of tough. And of course, that was right after survival training, jungle survival training. So that was pretty interesting.
Brutal.
It was kind of nasty. I remember we had a canteen full of water and halazone tablets and a piece of a parachute that you can make a para-hammock out of, and that was it. No food, nothing. And after 10 days, they finally gave us something to eat, and it was Arctic survival rations packed in 1962. Just great stuff.
Under tooled leather. Yum, yum.
Mm-hmm. But what I really want to tell you about, you were talking about condoms.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Golden Girls. And I remember they had an episode about condoms on that. And that's when they'd all decide to go off on a vacation. And Blanche said, well, ladies, we're going to go off. We're going to meet some gentlemen. And we may as well be prepared. And Dorothy and all of them agreed. And, of course, Rose was very reticent, played by Betty White.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were in this drugstore. And so basically Rose was just, and, of course, Rue McClanahan, she was the first one to go up there and say, I want this, that, and the other. And then Betty White went up there, followed by played by Dorothy, who said,
yeah,
she was saying, condoms, Rose, condoms, condoms. And the guy behind the counter said, take it easy, ladies, you just get out of prison. And then finally, Dorothy bought hers, and Rose went demurely back to the back, and she got up to the counter, and the guy got on the PA and the store and said, "Hey George, we need a price check on some condoms. This blonde up here wants the lambskin in black." That's one of the funniest episodes I've ever seen in that program of my life.
Oh, God, that's good. That's good.
I thought so, too. Well, listen, let me let you go. Have a good trip.
Thanks a lot, Jim. I appreciate
out
it.
Out here.
Bye. Oh, goodness. Let's see. About 20 minutes to go in the program. Thanks again. We have made our fundraising goal for yesterday and today. And so hopefully we can keep even by the time I get back here. PayPal button, you know where it is, headonradionetwork.com. Piece of trivia coming from Ron and Raleigh. I did not know this. Hey, Bob, Mr. Zapruder never used his camera again after capturing the Kennedy assassination. Well, that would make you feel a little bit snake-bit. Horrified. Stricken. Let's see. How to wrap up, because there's so much good stuff. How about the paranoia of Ted Cruz? He was on the Tonight Show last Friday, I guess. And Anne-Marie Murrell and Dr. Gina Loudon of the right-wing website PolitiChicks were all a titter to get access to Raphael's son. And they asked him, we begged for someone to stand up for us, and then you stood up for us. But then you were denigrated by both the left and the right. Does this make you want to chunk it in? Or does this make you want to fight harder for us? Cruz said, I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged because I think all across the country, I think people are getting energized. They're getting engaged. They're speaking up. And we shouldn't be surprised. Changing the country isn't easy. And the establishment is going to fight back. In both parties, they don't want to change. And so the reason the nastier the attacks get, I mean, they're directed at all of us. They're directed at the American people, because a lot of the folks in Washington don't want to be held accountable. Yeah. PolitiChicks is awesome. Y'all are doing an awesome job. Thank you for speaking up for freedom. Oh, Lord. So when people criticize Ted Cruz, they're actually criticizing America because, well, l'état, say him. What? Ego much? But then there's always Ted's daddy. There's a gun goons group in Oklahoma stand called OK2A. Get it? OK, Oklahoma, 2A, Second Amendment. And at this gun gathering, he decided to cruise-plane what's wrong with Merca, which doesn't yet have his son for its king, even though he's been anointed. And, of course, you know who the problem is, right? Sure you do.
Now, there are other foundations that the world sets on us. Let's talk about two of them, which are very...
Again with the reverb! Oh, well.
Interrelated. One of them is atheism. The other one is secular humanism. Let's look, for example, at the behavioral consequences of these two foundations.
Deplane.
Well, if there's nothing, if there's no God, then we're ruled by our instincts. There is no moral absolutes, which means we operate by situational ethics.
Oh, no.
Which, unfortunately, is something that is being taught in every high school in America. And situational ethics basically says that right and wrong depend on the circumstances. In other words, it's a moral relativism.
Oh, well, if it's a moral relativism, then obviously we've got a problem. You got this? So trying to make good judgments based upon the circumstances is somehow unchristian. You're supposed to just do whatever the Bible says whenever for instance, every Wednesday our buddy Jay Cruzen sends along some inspirational Bible verses for the evening. This evening was no different. And wow, are they just really, really inspirational. Let's go to 2 Chronicles chapter 15, verse 12 and 13 from the King James Version. And they entered into a covenant to seek the Lord God of their fathers with all their heart and with all their soul, that whosoever would not seek the Lord God of Israel should be put to death, whether small or great, whether man or woman. So that means, you know, we'll put children to death if we feel like our invisible friend has told us to do it. And then this from Zechariah chapter 13. And it shall come to pass that when any yet shall prophesy, then his father and his mother that begat him shall say unto him, Thou shalt not live, for thou speakest lies in the name of the Lord. And his father and his mother that begat him shall thrust him through when he prophesieth. That doesn't mean kick him out the door. That means gig him like a frog. Yeah. So, moral relative. Nope, doesn't matter. I just said this alphabet was good enough for Jehovah. Stone him! That's what you get with moral absolutes from the Bible.
Where you make your rules as you go on. And then, actually, they've taken it to the level to say, it doesn't make any difference what you believe in, as long as you're faithful to what you believe in. In other words, you make your own set of rules, and then you live by your own set of rules. And of course, he said, there are no absolutes. When it is convenient, you change the rules. Do we know any politicians that have done that? Well, we don't have to go...
Wait, stop it, wait. Did you get that? I'm sorry, I was talking over it. Do we know any politicians who have done that?
Change the rules. Do we know any politicians that have done that?
Hitler.
Well, we don't have to go that far, Larry. Just go to Washington.
You got that? This is a man of God who just said, we don't have to go as far as Hitler. And Larry, by the way, is Larry Pratt of Gun Goobers of America, who apparently approves of women being stalked by idiots with assault rifles for committing the unpardonable sin of having lunch together at an apparently dodgy restaurant in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area, this one in Arlington. Yeah. And so Raphael says, you don't have to go that far. Just Washington. No, really, he compared Hitler to politicians in Washington. Yeah, he really, really did.
Just go to the White House.
Just go to the White... Hey, look, Barack Obama's Hitler. I'll be damned. I love it when he compares Barack Obama to Hitler. I tell you what, that one just kills every time.
So, and of course, this leads us, when there are no moral absolutes, leads us to sexual immorality, leads us to sexual abuse, leads us to perversion, and of course, no hope.
Yep, no hope. Moral ambiguity leads to sexual abuse. Atheism is the cause of pedophiles. So I guess it's all those atheist Roman Catholic priests who have been... Wait, what? Sorry. Does not compute. And then, well, it's another Ginsu commercial. No, not going to do it. That's enough. Rafael Cruz says not believing in God will make you a pedophile. And there are millions and millions of people who can preach it, brother. Interestingly, however, for a guy who fulminates against gay folks and what not, new study out, published at Bloomberg News, kind of interesting this, the title of the Bloomberg News story, How People Lie About Gay Sex and Homophobia, Cass R. Sunstein. Writing this, and I guess Cass Sunstein works for the president, or it worked, or I mean, I don't know. Yep, former administrator of the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. He's a heavy hitter, that Cass Sunstein. Kind of scary, too. This is a guy who says the precautionary principle is a bad idea. Social theorists, above all Duke University's Timur Kuran, have drawn attention to the phenomenon of preference falsification. The basic idea is that when people speak in public, they aren't always truthful about their preferences. What they say is different from what they really think. In unfree societies, people may be too frightened to disclose their actual views in opinion surveys, but preference falsification can also afflict democracies. I wonder which one he's talking about, because this ain't one. If social pressures lead people to misdescribe their real views and behavior. Recent research uncovers strong evidence of preference falsification in the United States. When people are assured of anonymity, it turns out a lot more of them will acknowledge that they have had same-sex experiences and they don't entirely identify as heterosexual. But it also turns out that when people are assured of anonymity, they will show significantly higher rates of anti-gay sentiment. These results suggest that recent surveys have been understating, at least to some degree, two different things: the current level of same-sex activity and the current level of opposition to gay rights. And this is premised upon research by Ohio State University economist Catherine Kaufman. 2,516 people participated. They were all from the United States. About half of them were randomly assigned to take a standard survey employing the best practices in widespread use. They were asked to respond to several innocuous questions not involving sensitive issues, and then to answer questions about sexual orientation designed to elicit both their views and their reports about their own behavior. The other participants got the veiled report treatment. The survey was designed so that the experimenters can't learn and can't even make inferences about anybody's answer to a particular question. They can calculate answers only at the aggregate level. And the two surveys yielded significantly wild different results. 17% of participants said they had had a sexual experience with someone of the same sex, 12% of men, 24% of women. And in the veiled report, the corresponding number was 27% of men, or 27%, 17% men, 43% women. And that's a 58% jump. In the standard survey, 14% of people said discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is okay, but it jumped to 25% in the veiled report. Huh. Now, remember, something like 78 to 80% of Americans self-identify as God believers. Now you see why we so often wonder how long it will be before your average Joel Osteen type gets caught in a bathroom with meth and the gay. And then the biggest giggle I got all day. And we'll just close with this. I try not to even mention the woman much, although we did earlier. The half-baked Alaskan, thank you, Irish Dave, Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, Godzilla from Wasilla, the woman who can see Russia from her house, gave an interview to Jake Tapper of the Chicken Noodle News. Why anybody would want to interview her, I have no idea. It's kind of not a recommendation for the quality of Jake Tapper's journalism. But they got around to religion, and she volunteered that she's a little nervous about that Pope Francis out there not sufficiently hating on the queers. But she thinks that maybe he really properly hates homosexuals because it might be the liberal media lame-streaming his words. You do remember that this woman is a wild-eyed, fanatical fundamentalist. They're kind of famous for being kind of proudly anti-Catholic. But suddenly she's... Oh, excommunicator Frank! Or drop a house on her. Somebody grab the shoes. So that's where we end it, and I'm sorry, we won't be talking again until Tuesday evening. I'll miss you. I'll miss our conversations. But I'm also looking forward to seeing my friends in Wisconsin. And I'm deeply honored to be even a small part of the spirited, inspiring defense that they are making of their homes and their lives and their futures. Thanks to everybody who helps keep all of this going. Thanks for your kind contributions. Thank you for your participation either by phone, by Skype, by email, by Twitter, by and by the way, Juanita, you got a big shout out from Sandra this evening. It was really cool, neat, a really fun tweet a little bit ago, a little bit back. Sandra noting by Twitter, Juanita's killing it with the creepy cruise business, LOL. Thank goodness for her. I love it that you guys are fans of each other. It's cool. Thanks. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. Go there to learn how you can be a part of helping us end the daily horrors that beset Central Appalachia. ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the horn.